come to her. Nothing worked. While the cat mocked her from the safety of a bush 10 feet ahead, Danny crouched low in the shadows of a house and regrouped. Through some crazy luck, the cat managed to head in the right direction. Danny couldn't be more than a block or two from the Wilkinson's place. Maybe I should just give up. Danny frowned. No way. Not after coming this far. The cat would be in her arms, or she would have the scratches to prove she tried before she admitted defeat. Danny eased forward in a crouch, fingers out once again in an attempt to coax it toward her.
Psst, psst. Here, kitty, kitty.
Closer and closer she crept, closing the distance from 5 to 4 to 3 feet. When she could almost touch the striped fur, Danny lunged. The cat got away.
Damn it to hell!
Danny stood up in a rush, lashing out at the nearest bush in a fit of disappointment. If she couldn't catch a cat, how could she hope to survive outside of a city? Food didn't come in a can or on a shelf in the wild.
Danny, is that you?
She jerked her head up. In all of her fit-making, she'd lost sight of her surroundings. A woman stood on a dark front porch, only lit by the early morning light.
Who's there?
It's Melody. Are you in trouble? Do you need some help? Melody Harper stepped down her front steps and hurried to the street where Danny still stood. With her hair pulled back in a ponytail and button-up pajamas on, she looked younger than Danny first thought. Danny exhaled.
I'm trying to catch a cat. It won't come to me.
Melody scanned the area. Is it hurt? Does it need help? A couple of jerks tried to tape a firework to its tail. Melody gasped.
How do you know?
I stopped them. Are you all right? Did they hurt you? A vision of the man she shot appeared in her mind, but Danny shook her head.
I'm fine, but the cat has tape all over it. I just wanted to get it cleaned up.
Melody motioned toward her house. Come with me. I have an idea. Danny stayed a step or two behind Melody as they climbed the stairs.
Do you live here?
Melody opened the door and ushered Danny inside. With my brother Doug. It was our parents' house. When they died in a car accident, we inherited it.
She lives with her brother?
Danny scrunched up her nose.
Why didn't you sell it? Why live together?
I don't know. It just seemed like the thing to do. Danny shut the door behind her and stood in the entryway of Melody's home. The front door opened into a small living room with a white couch and a pair of uncomfortable-looking chairs. A dining room table sat just beyond, and past that, the kitchen. Melody ushered her toward the back.
I think I've got a can of tuna left. Even if the little stinker isn't hungry, he'll come for tuna.
She opened a pair of tall cabinets and squinted into the dark.
It's so funny how much I used to take for granted. Lights, a full pantry, gas in my car.
She reached in with one hand and batted around in the dark.
What I wouldn't give for a cat's vision.
Why?
Give a cat the tiniest amount of light, and they can see as well as we can in the daylight.
Really?
Yep. They might not have opposable thumbs, but they can see a mouse in the middle of a cornfield at midnight.
Melody pulled out her arm and wiggled a single can of tuna in the air.
I knew it.
After opening the can and scooping a spoonful of meat and liquid into a dish, Melody ushered Danny back inside. Within minutes, Melody's strategy worked, and she scooped the cat up into her arms and trotted back into the house with Danny on her heels. They set to work cutting the tape out of the cat's fur while it snarfed down the fish. The last piece of tape came away just as the cat licked the bowl clean. Before Danny could even think about petting it, off it ran out the front door. Melody shut and locked the door behind the cat and offered Danny a seat on the sofa. Danny hesitated. Hang out with Melody?
Maybe I should be heading back.
Not at this hour. You go knocking on their door now, and you're liable to get your arm blown off. Harvey's not a morning person these days.
Danny frowned, but gave in, opting to sit on the edge of the couch covered with a dark blanket. She didn't trust her jeans to be clean. Thanks.
Are you hungry? Thirsty? I can get you some water and something to eat if you'd like.
She shook her head. It's okay. I've already taken your time.
Melody tucked herself into one of the chairs across from Danny, her feet disappearing beneath loose pajama pants.
So, what has you out in the middle of the night?
Danny nibbled on her lower lip, unsure how much truth to tell.
I wanted some fresh air.
Melody nodded. I know the feeling. I love this house, but 3 weeks trapped here with nothing to do, and even I'm going crazy.
Why don't you go somewhere, scout out the neighborhood or take a walk?
And risk getting picked up by a patrol? Melody shook her head. No thanks. I'd rather go crazy than get rounded up by the militia.
She had a point. Danny never intended to confront the men at the model house. When she heard them laughing and talking and carrying on, she only meant to observe, not shoot one. But she couldn't watch them kill that cat.
How long do you think we can stay here without getting caught?
You and Colt?
Danny nodded. Melody's eyebrows dipped as she thought it over.
As long as they don't find that little room in Harvey's basement. I'd say as long as you want.
It might have been the lack of sleep, or the clarity of the early morning. But something made Danny go right to the heart of it. No small talk, no pleasantries. Do you all intend to fight? Would you really go up against Colonel Jarvis and his men? Melody inhaled, and her chest swelled with the trapped breath. As she exhaled, she shifted in the chair, bringing one knee up close to her chest before wrapping her arms around it.
I'm willing. Harvey is too. I don't know about the rest.
What about your brother? He's a firefighter. He's gotta want to help.
Doug's... Melody trailed off, eyes wandering to the photos of her childhood on the wall. Doug's a rule follower. It happens with oldest kids a lot. He's not willing to stand up to the army. Not when they are in charge.
Danny bounced on the couch, almost standing up in outrage. But they aren't the army anymore. Jarvis isn't reporting to anyone but himself.
I know it. You and Colt and Harvey know it. But Doug, he's reluctant to see it.
They ambushed Colt and tried to kill him. They used my grant.
Danny choked on the word, but forced her voice on.
To get to me.
If Colt hadn't rescued me,
she couldn't say it. She wouldn't relive the terror of that night in the apartment. That soldier's hands all over her. His eyes as they popped inside his skull. She focused on the floor. They are bad men. They deserve to die.
I'm sorry for what you went through.
Danny pressed her lips together but said nothing.
I can't imagine what it must have been like.
It would have been a hell of a lot worse without Colt.
Melody's voice grew soft.
How did you two meet?
Danny picked at a loose thread on her borrowed jeans.
He saved me from a soldier in the street. The guy caught me stealing from a convenience store. He was going to take me in. After that, we ended up sticking together.
Lucky you. Colt seems like a good man.
Danny flicked her eyes up. He is, so don't hurt him.
Melody leaned back, her eyes wide.
I wouldn't.
Good. Danny pushed off the couch and forced her lips to curve.
Thanks for helping with the cat. I should be going.
Are you sure?
Danny nodded. She couldn't stay there another minute. She needed to be alone. Thanks.
Before Melody could say anything more, Danny acted like the cat and bolted for the door.
Chapter 11. Melody. Harper Residence, Eugene, Oregon, 6 a.m. Melody counted off 4 minutes in her head before shoving the plunger of her French press down and squishing the coffee grounds to the bottom of the carafe. She poured a fresh, steaming cup and brought it to her nose. The pick-me-up goodness of coffee always made her morning. Too bad there wouldn't be many more like it. She eyed the dregs of her ground coffee. One more pot. Two. She should save it for a special occasion. Maybe when they took down the army and got back to their lives. Melody snorted at herself and headed to the living room. The sky tinged gray with morning, lighting up the street enough to see the Clifton's place across the street. Before the collapse of the grid, John would be out in his front yard stretching his hamstrings before taking off on a run. Now his house sat quiet and accusing, like Melody's Aunt Mary at a family reunion. She sipped her coffee with a frown. All these people, the street, the neighborhood. There used to be a sense of community, a friendship of sorts by nature of living next to each other and sharing the same patch of dirt and looking up at the same sky. Colonel Jarvis and his men ruined that. Now everyone cowered inside, waiting. For what? She eased down onto the bench in front of the window. The sky brightened bit by bit, changing from dark gray to almost purple to pale blue. Not even Lottie came to greet her this morning, content to sleep the morning away upstairs in her bed, rather than face another breakfast of crunched-up crackers and canned soup. The poor dog even missed dry dog food at this point. Thanks to Gloria and Harvey, Doug learned how to dig a pit toilet in the backyard. At 10 feet deep, it took him days to dig, but he heaped the dirt around it in a berm to keep out the rain, and even rigged up a tarp as a quasi-cover. It wasn't much, but Melody appreciated going to the bathroom in some semblance of privacy. She wondered about the rest of her neighbors. Were they using the water the army delivered to flush their toilets? Or had they come up with something similar? Not being able to talk for fear of an unexpected raid turned their entire lives upside down. How could they band together and rely on each other if being caught in the street or at a neighbor's house could mean the loss of freedom? Melody thought back to the first inspection, as Jarvis and his men liked to call it. A soldier with a megaphone jumped down from a Humvee, demanding everyone come outside. There were families and children and pets in the yards, all waiting with hope and promise. It didn't take long to dash it. He laid out the rules. Curfew every night, inspections every week, all weapons and pets confiscated. Everyone needed to stay inside as much as possible. If you were seen on the street, even during the day, you were treated as a hostile combatant and dealt with appropriately. People balked at first. Some shouted, raised their hands, shook their heads. It wasn't until the inspection started, and the soldiers dragged dogs and cats and other pets out of homes, that some of the neighbors lost it. John from across the street was the loudest. He stomped up to the nearest guardsman, a burly man with a permanent scowl. John's finger hovered an inch from the guy's chest.
Who do you think you are? Coming in here and telling us all what to do? You're treating us like criminals, and we haven't even done anything.
The soldier braced himself.
We're following orders, sir.
Whose orders? I want to know who has the nerve to come into our neighborhood, take our animals and weapons, and order us to stay put. Who would do such a thing?
Melody stood beside Gloria on the Wilkinsons' front porch, watching with increasing unease. The door to one of the rear Humvees opened, and a broad-shouldered man with gray hair and solemn face exited the vehicle. He walked up to John and the soldier.
Is there a problem, Sergeant Mitchell? This resident is asking about you, sir.
The older man turned.
I see. And what is it you would like to ask me?
John puffed out his workout shirt-clad chest.
What gives you the right to order us around? Who are you?
My name is Colonel Malcolm Jarvis, and I'm in charge of the National Guard Brigade combat team assigned to this area. I can assure you, we're following standard protocol for a situation like this.
By taking our pets? Rooting through our houses? How?
Our primary goal is to keep you safe and alive. It's easier to do that when we know what you have and what you need.
You can do that with a questionnaire. You don't need to rob us.
Colonel Jarvis stepped forward, and his voice dropped low enough for only John to hear. Whatever he said caused John to step back, shock on his face. The colonel smiled and glanced around.
Any more questions?
No one spoke up.
Good. Inspections begin now. Please return to your homes and wait.
Melody remembered scooping up Lottie and rushing inside the Wilkinson's house. Gloria ushered the little dog into the back basement room with a leftover bone from dinner and pulled the paint cans in front of the door. The entire time the soldiers searched the street, she prayed they wouldn't find Lottie. It worked the first time, but would it work again? How many inspections would they survive? What would happen if they found the little dog? She glanced back at the Clifton's dark house. One day, John just stopped coming outside. She didn't know if he decided to stay in, or if the army finally rounded him up and carted him off. Either was terrible. The army destroyed everything that made this neighborhood great. In a month, another 6 weeks, would there be anyone left? When everyone was dirty and hungry and beyond desperate, would they beg to be either put out of their miseries or put to work? Was that the plan all along? Take upstanding, rule-following citizens and turn them into indentured servants to support Jarvis's need for power? Melody wished she understood the point of it all. The familiar sound of little feet trundling down the stairs brought a smile to her face. Lottie scampered up to her, eyes bright and tail wagging. She scooped her up and nuzzled her little neck.
"Hey there, little girl. How are you this morning?"
As she stood up, about to take Lottie out to the backyard so she could do her business, Melody froze. A low growl rumbled up from Lottie's chest, and she poked her head around Melody's body, struggling to see out the front window. Melody shushed her and stepped closer to the glass, shielding Lottie from view while she looked out. At first, she didn't see anything, but after a moment, she caught it. A light. It bobbed and weaved inside the Clifton's house, coming in and out of view through their first-floor windows. Vandals? Angela digging through her stuff in the dark? Melody bent her head to whisper in Lottie's ear.
"What is it, sweetie? Do you hear or smell something I don't? Is it a bad guy?"
Lottie squirmed in her arms, and Melody set her on the ground. The little dog went straight to the back door, nose sniffing at the crack. Melody rushed to the door and risked a glance out the side window. She rolled her eyes and bent down to scoop up her dog.
"It's okay, Lot. I don't like him either."
She nuzzled her dog's ear before putting her down.
"You go ahead and give him hell."
Melody stood up and undid the locks to allow Lucas inside.
"Doug's not up yet."
Lucas stepped in.
"You should wake him up."
"Why?"
"Because there's something going on across the street. Something bad."
Melody rushed back to the front of the house, talking over her shoulder at Lucas.
"I saw a flashlight over there moving about. Did someone break in?"
She flicked her eyes up to the window, and her breath caught. Lucas was right. Angela wasn't alone across the street. A man stood in the living room window, holding a rifle in two hands as he surveyed the street. From the camouflage clothes to the way he carried himself, he had to be one of Jarvis's men. He paused as he stared at Melody's house.
"Can he see me?"
She shrank back against the wall and held her breath. After counting to 10, she risked another glance. The man was gone. Melody exhaled. Whatever was happening across the street, they needed to stay vigilant. She opened her mouth to say something to Lucas, when a curtain in another window fluttered. Melody motioned for him to get back, and she tucked in close to the wall, watching.
A rush of blonde hair, a hand on the window.
Oh my God. Angela tore back the window curtain, and even from across the street, there was no mistaking the giant black eye that turned her face purple. She pawed at the glass with frantic hands, fists thumping and fingers scrabbling. Melody spun around. We have to do something. Angela's been attacked. It's a home invasion. Lucas's mouth fell open.
I don't think we...
Melody practically shoved him aside. What did he come here for? To gawk while their neighbors were hurt? Killed? This wasn't a movie. It was real life. Melody reached for the door handle. She had to do something. She couldn't let those men abuse her neighbor. Another soldier appeared in the window. He grabbed Angela. Her mouth contorted in a scream. Her hands flew to his face, and she clawed and kicked. The man punched Angela in the face, and her head whipped around from the impact. The curtain fell, and Melody couldn't stand there another second. She would take a stand. She would do something, anything, to save Angela. She turned the knob to the door, just as a hand wrapped around her mouth. Chapter 12. Angela. Clifton Residence, Eugene, Oregon. 6 a.m. The meaty fist came at her again, and Angela closed her eyes. The second the soldier's knuckles slammed into her face, she screamed. Pain and anger ripped from her throat as her head whipped to the right. Her brain slammed around in her skull like a pinball, ricocheting against the bone so hard she lost her bearings. As her body crumpled to the floor, a boot connected with her side. She screamed again, more desperate animal than happy housewife. Her old life was long gone. She cradled her head with her arms in a weak attempt to stay alive. These men were going to kill them in their own house, for no reason. She swallowed a mouthful of blood and spit, and managed to speak.
What do you want from us?
The boots stopped an inch from her face, and the stench of her own blood on the toes forced bile up her throat.
You know what we want. Your husband can get the power back on. He needs to do it.
I told you. I can't. It's impossible.
The boots retreated from Angela's field of view, and she risked a glance in her husband's direction. Loops of duct tape secured his arms to a chair and bound his legs together. One side of his face swelled with bruises and clotting blood. A tooth dangled at a disgusting angle. Angela pleaded with her eyes.
Please, John.
Just tell them you'll help.
Please.
He needed to lie. Say anything to keep the fists still and away from her face. A few more kicks, and her spleen would rupture, or a rib would puncture a lung.
Her husband shook his head. The grid is down. Without it, I can't get the central station online.
The head soldier scowled, his pockmarked face contorting in a quiet rage.
That's not what I've been told. It's a natural gas power station. The gas is still running. There's a way to do it. Not without functioning electronics, and the EMP destroyed them all. I've told you this a million times. The power station can't harness the energy from the steam produced unless the electronic components are functioning.
So make them function.
I can't.
John spat a wad of blood from his mouth, and it landed on what used to be a cream carpet. Now, blood and dirt and tears streaked the pale fibers in a picture of misery.
Angela whimpered. It was a mistake.
The second the little sound squeaked out, the boss man spun around. She cowered, trying in vain to shrink her body down to nothing. He walked back over, and Angela didn't dare look his way. Lowering into a crouch, he stopped close enough for her to smell the liquor on his breath.
"We've been patient, Mr. Clifton. Your poor wife here has been a trooper. But how much more can she take?"
He nudged her with a finger, and Angela shrank back, scrabbling to pull her pajamas down to cover her skin.
"Don't touch me, you bastard."
"At some point, her body's just going to give out, don't you think?"
Angela wondered how long they would keep beating her. At some point, when the fists and boots weren't enough, would they turn to more drastic measures? Would they all take turns? 8 soldiers hopped up on violence and gore, and her broken body as the only release. She would never survive.
"He said he can't help you. Why won't you listen?"
The soldier tilted his head until he could look her in the eye.
"Your husband is underestimating his abilities."
John shouted at the man.
"If I could help you, I would. You think I like being beaten, or watching you hurt my wife?"
"You must. Otherwise you'd find a way."
The soldier smiled at her, and something inside Angela snapped. She couldn't lie there and let those men hit and kick her to death. She tried to suck in a breath, but every expansion of her lungs radiated searing pain around her middle. Too many broken ribs to breathe. She looked up at her husband's placating face, distorted by another man's authority. Why wouldn't he lie, or sacrifice himself, or try to fight back? Anything but sit there and beg. If they didn't do something, they would die in their own living room. She peered at the soldier standing guard at the front door and the hallway, while the big guy in charge delivered blow after blow. They just stood there like robots, unseeing, unmoving. Did they agree with him? Were they comfortable with this torture? Angela palmed the floor beneath her, digging her fingers into the bloodied carpet. She had to get out. Screw lying there and hoping her husband would come up with a solution. Even if he did take them to the power plant, if what he said was true, it would be a fruitless mission. They would kill them both as soon as they realized the truth. Escaping was the only option. The front door wasn't possible. Neither was the back. But the stairs were unguarded. Angela moaned and rolled on the floor until her head pointed toward the stairs. "Can I get out a second floor window? Would the front porch break my fall?" A few more broken bones didn't matter. If she got away, she would still be alive. She relaxed her muscles and let her body fall slack. Eyes closed, mouth half open and drooling. The enforcer nudged her with his toe. She rocked like a sack of potatoes.
"Looks like wifey here gave up. She's unconscious."
He stepped back.
"Johnson, get some water from the kitchen. We need to wake the missus up."
As the bastard walked away, Angela inhaled. Adrenaline spiked her blood, accelerated her heart, and gave her courage. She sprang to her feet. The stairs were 10 steps away. So damn far. She lunged toward them, stumbling and tripping over her own body as she plowed ahead. Her fingers wrapped around the railing and she hoisted herself up, ignoring the pain and the fear as she raced for her life. Everything behind her devolved to chaos. The guards on the door and hallway shouted. Her husband joined in. The one who beat her barked out orders. Angela ignored it all. 13 steps, one after the other, up and up and up. The landing rose to meet her, and she fell against it. Clawing her way back to stand, she staggered down the hall, bumping against the beige walls that she agonized over for 6 months. Oyster or bisque? Parchment or pale plume? To think, paint color used to matter. She rushed into the closest bedroom with the thunder of boots behind her, The door heaved against her weight. Oh, how she wished it was solid metal, with reinforced strike plates, instead of the antique wood she insisted on 2 years before. The house had been her pride and joy, the culmination of so many years of planning and hard work. Now she would trade all the attention to detail for a shotgun and a box of shells. Angela slammed the door shut and locked it as a pair of fists slammed into it from the other side. No time to waste. She backpedaled, falling over the guest bed as boots cracked and splintered the mahogany wood door. Struggling with the window lock, her fingers ached and complained, but she pushed harder, twisting and turning until the stubborn lock popped free. Angela tugged on the window pulls. Nothing budged.
No.
She slammed the frame of the window, shooting pain up her forearms as she beat against the swollen wood.
Unstick, damn it.
The upstairs windows were always a pain. Replacements had been on the list, something she hoped to tackle next year. But she kept putting it off, opting instead for a new carpet or a mailbox. Superficial things that didn't matter now. Angela pounded on the glass, screaming her heart out at the world just beyond her window. Someone somewhere had to hear her. Someone would help. A massive crash brought the door to the bedroom down, and bits of wood and drywall pelted her back. She twisted around as two soldiers stormed the room.
I failed.
She turned back to the window and led with her shoulder, hoping against all probability to shatter the glass. It reverberated with her might, but didn't even crack. A soldier's arm wrapped around her waist. She palmed the glass. His other hand grabbed her by the hair. The last thing she saw was the flutter of a curtain across the street. The enforcer from downstairs pressed his nose against her cheek and pulled her back into the bedroom.
I'd so wanted to have some fun, but you forced my hand. I can't risk an escape.
He gripped her face and dug his fingers into her jaw with one hand, while he held her shoulder with the other. As he cranked her head savagely to the right, Angela's world turned black.
Chapter 13. Colt. Harper Residence, Eugene, Oregon, 6:30 a.m. Colt leaned close enough to whisper, "You won't be any good dead." Melody's eyes flicked to the left as she sagged in relief. Her chest heaved, and he let her go. She spun to face Colt.
"You scared me half to death."
That was a walk in the park compared to what's going on across the street. Her eyes darted back to the neighbor's window, now motionless and empty but for the curtain.
"We have to do something. I saw Angela. She's all beat up. If they're holding her hostage or using her to get to John..."
Melody's voice grew silent as she brought a hand up to cover her lips.
"You don't think they're..."
Her voice trailed off, eyes as wide as the front window. Colt frowned and glanced at the man standing awkwardly a few feet away. He stuck out his hand.
"Lucas, right?"
Lucas reciprocated.
"Yeah. Good to see you, Colt."
From the way Lucas barely shook his hand, Colt didn't think he was too keen on Colt's presence. Whatever. He wasn't the issue at the moment. Colt turned back to Melody, but was stopped by a paw to his leg. He lowered into a crouch and roughed up Lottie's fur. The little thing wiggled and panted and acted like Colt's awkward scratching was the best thing ever. Dogs. He stood up and pointed at the window. "Tell me exactly what you saw."
"I was up early and couldn't go back to sleep, so I made myself some coffee."
Melody's voice trembled, full of bad memories.
"I was thinking about Colonel Jarvis and the National Guard and everything that's happened in the last 3 weeks. I wasn't focused on anything outside, just staring aimlessly out the window. That's probably why I caught it."
"What?" She jerked her head across the street.
"The light across the street. It looked like a flashlight, searching around. Then Lucas knocked on the door."
Colt spun around. "You saw it too?" The other man nodded.
Doug always told me to keep an eye out.
Colt raised an eyebrow. Do you live on the street?
No, over by the college, but I go walking when I can't sleep.
Colt raised an eyebrow. That hasn't been a problem with the army?
Lucas stuffed his hands in his pockets.
Not yet. After this, I don't know if I'll keep it up.
Melody interrupted.
After Lucas told me something was happening at the Clifton's place, I went back to the window. A soldier appeared in the window, and I ducked behind the wall to watch him. A few seconds later, I saw Angela upstairs.
Melody pressed her lips together as if her body didn't want to give voice to her thoughts.
She looked terrified.
Colt exhaled. Melody's account matched his own. He didn't know how much to tell her about last night. Glancing at Lucas, he opted to keep the details light. I left late last night on a reconnaissance mission to scope out the area. I wanted to know how much of a presence Jarvis maintained in the area. I was on the way back when I saw them.
They entered the house this morning?
Colt nodded. 8 soldiers, heavily armed and all on foot, not a vehicle in sight. Lucas stepped back, eyes wide.
Why would the army do that?
Whatever they're doing in that house, they don't want to be seen. Colt left out the rest of his analysis. Without a vehicle, it also meant the guard didn't plan on taking any prisoners. Melody shook her head.
But we've already seen them. We have to help Angela and John. We can't leave them in there to be tortured or killed or whatever those barbarians are doing.
Melody bent over and scooped Lottie up into her arms.
They're our neighbors.
Colt understood the desire to help. He'd been in similar situations countless times before. As a SEAL, he spent a lot of time watching and waiting for the right opportunity. Sometimes in the cost-benefit analysis, the costs were heavy. He waited until Melody looked him in the eye.
We can't go in there, Melody.
Why not?
There's 8 of them.
Danny and I barely survived a fight against 4 men, and I'm nowhere near 100%. It's simple math.
But you fought them before and won.
Not like this. Colt ran his hand through his hair, wincing as pain lanced his wounded bicep. We'd be exposed. No cover, no backup. We don't know what they've done inside that house to protect themselves. We don't know how many lookouts they have. Hell, I risked a ton just sneaking into your backyard.
They are good people, and they could be killed.
Colt's jaw ticked.
It won't be the first time.
Lucas stood on the edge of the conversation, eyes darting back and forth between Melody and Colt, saying nothing. He didn't strike Colt as much help. From the flip-flops to the worn jeans and the shaggy hair, he screamed soft. Weak.
What do you think, Lucas?
The man ran a hand through his hair and looked around like some other Lucas was standing nearby.
Me? I don't know. That's why I came here. I thought Doug would know what to do.
Colt pressed on.
What would you do?
Lucas held up his hands.
Against the army? Nothing.
Melody opened her mouth in outrage.
How can you say that? How can you both stand there and act like it's hopeless?
Because it is.
Colt pressed his lips together, trying to come up with a way to make Melody understand. We have to pick our battles. If we rush into every fight, we'll never win them all. If you want Jarvis out of Eugene, then we have to lie low on this one.
They are our friends. Angela was beaten, scared out of her mind. She was in the window practically begging for someone to see her and help. I can't just leave her there.
Colt's patience frayed.
If you're so convinced we should go in there, then tell me. What's your plan?
How are you going to actually save them? His tone harshened despite his attempt to keep it even. How are you going to actually accomplish what you want?
Melody's stiff back and rigid shoulders sagged inch by inch until she almost dripped onto the floor.
I don't know. I hadn't thought it out.
Exactly. She rose up a bit.
That doesn't mean it isn't the right thing to do.
I'm aware of that.
Colt walked over to the couch and sat down. But sometimes what's just is the absolute worst option.
So you're going to leave them there and do nothing?
You're damn straight.
He leaned back and propped his wounded leg on the cushion. I go in there and I'm committing suicide. So are you. All that will happen is Jarvis will have 2 more prisoners to torture and maim and your friends will still die.
Melody paused before she spoke.
I'm sorry you feel that way, Colt.
Something in her voice changed, and Colt eyed her with suspicion. Don't think of playing the hero, Melody. You'll only get yourself killed. She shook her head, face grim.
Sometimes you have to do what's right, regardless of the consequences.
Shit. Colt dragged his sore and damaged body off the couch as Melody spun for the door. He closed the distance between them, his feet pounding the wood floor with every step. As she turned the knob, he grabbed her by the shoulder. You can't do this.
Let me go.
She shrugged away from him, but Colt gripped harder and yanked her back. Melody crashed into him. Her elbow slammed into his bicep and Colt swore. Whipping her around, he took a hold of Melody's arms, digging his fingers in hard enough to bruise. Get some damn sense, woman. You can't help them. Melody twisted in his grip, struggling to get free.
You're hurting me. Let me go.
You go over there, and those men will hurt you a hell of a lot worse. Get your hands off my sister. Colt jerked his head toward the voice. Melody's brother Doug stood at the base of the stairs, wearing nothing but a pair of jeans and a scowl. No, she's trying to get herself killed. Doug stepped forward. Let her go. Colt shook his head. If I do, she'll bolt for the front door, and the next time you see your sister, you'll be scraping her guts off the pavement. Doug hesitated and glanced at his friend. Lucas nodded.
Colt's right. Melody was about to run for the door.
Mel? Doug turned to his sister.
We can't ignore it.
She tugged against his hands again, but Colt refused to budge. Colt steeled himself. We have to. Her brother stepped forward. You're not putting yourself in danger, Melody. Not until we talk about whatever's going on.
We're wasting time.
Colt turned to Doug. This had to end now. Tell your sister that if she doesn't stop fighting, I'm going to either tie her to a chair or knock her out. Her choice. Lucas looked shocked, but Doug didn't. He kept most of a smile to himself. The more I get to know you, the more I like you, Colt. He turned to his sister. Colt's right. We need to talk. Running into something without a plan is how you get yourself killed. He reached out and pushed her hair away from her face. Even in a life-or-death situation with a fire, we plan first, Melody. Melody frowned.
Fine. I won't bolt.
Colt loosened his grip. Promise? She nodded, and he let her go. Doug motioned toward the back of the house. How about you all come into the kitchen and tell me what's going on while I get some coffee? I can't make a decision without some caffeine.
Lucas hung back. I feel like I'm interrupting. You all can handle this, right?
Doug reached for a t-shirt draped over the back of the couch and tugged it on. You sure? We've probably got enough coffee to share.
No, it's okay. I should probably get back home anyway.
Lucas managed a tight smile in Colt's direction.
Good to see you again.
Colt lifted his hand but didn't reciprocate the smile as Doug escorted Lucas out the back door. Lingering in the living room, Colt checked once more for movement in the house across the street. Melody's insistence on stopping the army got under his skin. He didn't like it. Feelings weren't his thing. Danny was enough of an attachment. He didn't need a woman like Melody complicating his life. But seeing her about to rush the front door and put herself in harm's way for a pair of neighbors did something to him. The urge to protect her, not just to keep her alive, but safe and content and away from the horrors of this new existence overwhelmed him. This was the reason he left the university, fear of connecting with another person and putting her needs above his own. Colt cursed at himself. Emotions made wrecks of men, tore them up and spit them out worse than they were before. Time and again he'd seen it, not just on the front lines or in a covert op, but at home, in the everyday existence of before. Feelings killed. He scrubbed a hand down his face and tested the use of his leg. It hurt, but he could climb a ladder if he had to. The lack of sleep the night before wasn't new, but his years as an air marshal softened his skills. Colt wasn't the SEAL he used to be. If Melody couldn't accept the hard choices, if she couldn't rationally assess when to fight and when to hide, then what future did she have? He hadn't shared with her the worst of his fears. The soldiers across the street didn't know they were connected, not yet. But if Jarvis learned Melody, her brother, and the Wilkinses were helping Colt and Danny, then everything changed. All of them were at risk, not just of death, but of much, much worse. Jarvis would use any one of them to get to Colt. One look at Melody and she would go to the top of the list. He couldn't let that happen. If Melody couldn't see reason, Colt didn't have a choice. He would have to leave, whether Danny wanted to go with him or not.
Chapter 14. Danny. Wilkins residence. Eugene Organ, 8 a.m. We have to do something. They're good people. John and Angela have lived here for years. They've never been anything but nice. They even watched Lottie when Doug and I went to visit family last year. Melody hugged a cup of coffee as if it were the only comfort on earth.
It doesn't matter how nice they are, Melody. Colt crossed his arms. We can't go in there blind.
So don't. Danny chewed on the inside of her lip. She didn't understand how grown adults couldn't see the reality of the situation. Only Colt and Doug understood. The pair of them sat on the couch, for once not arguing with each other. The minute the three of them showed up, Danny knew something bad must have happened. She never expected a hostage situation. Doug brought her focus back to the conversation.
It's too dangerous. Right now we're not on the Army's radar. If we go over there, then we're putting everyone here at risk. Not just us, Melody, but Harvey and Gloria. Will, too. I know you want to help, but we would only be hurting ourselves.
Colt rubbed his forehead as he focused on the coffee table in front of him.
Doug is right. I've been on plenty of recovery missions. This isn't one I would ever sign off on. Not as a SEAL, not now.
Gloria spoke up. What if one of us just walked across the street and knocked on the door? I could bring some water over and pretend I'm just there to visit.
The second the soldiers inside see you, you'll become another hostage.
Or worse. Doug shook his head.
I can't believe we're still having this conversation. The only option is to lie low and keep an eye out. That's all.
Melody thunked her mug down on the table. We can't ignore it. We have to help them. Danny stuck out her chin. Easy for you to say. Melody's eyes snapped up, and she pinned Danny with a stare.
Excuse me?
She pushed off the wall and walked up to the couch to stand behind Colt and Doug. It's easy to vote to fight when you won't be the one risking your life. Melody's brows dipped.
I never said I wouldn't fight.
But you never said you would either. Do you even know how to fire a gun, hold a rifle? Can you defend yourself when a soldier catches you and tries to rip your clothes off? The other woman's eyes went wide, but Danny didn't stop. These people needed to understand what they were up against. They needed to know the hell she had already suffered, how it was just the tip of the freaking iceberg. Danny gripped the edge of the couch for support. These soldiers? The army that came here to save you? They won't hesitate to take advantage. The second they catch you, you're nothing more than a body, an object they can use. If they know you've got a brother over here who cares about you, they'll use you as bait. Mrs. Wilkins spoke up from her spot across the room.
Danielle, that's enough.
No, let her finish.
Colt turned around and gave her a nod.
Tell them, Danny.
She swallowed. Memories of the night trapped with Colonel Jarvis and his men fresh in her mind. If they don't care about your welfare, if it doesn't matter to them whether you live or die, then you're just fun. If Colt hadn't rescued me... Danny pressed her lips together, drawing up the power to keep her voice even. If he hadn't risked everything to get me out of that apartment, I would be dead.
But before that, I'd have been used in every way imaginable. Melody paled, but Danny plowed on. I was trapped in the bathroom with one, a real winner who smoked like a chimney and never quit leering. He pinned me to the shower wall, thrust his hand between my legs. He didn't plan on stopping. Movement caught her eye, and Danny noticed Will hovering in the hallway, listening. Fine, let him hear it. Maybe it would wake him up. Maybe her story would wake all of them the hell up. I was trapped, wearing nothing but my underwear, and his hands were all over me, groping, touching, tugging at my panties. I had a choice in that bathroom. I could let him rape me, or I could fight back. Danny straightened up to her full height, letting go of the couch to stand on her own. I chose to fight back. Do you know what it feels like to pop a man's eyeballs? To jab your finger so hard into another human's eyes that they explode like cherry tomatoes under pressure? She focused on Melody. I do. Colt reached out and grabbed her hand. He squeezed and Danny sucked in a breath. Melody exhaled. I'm sorry, Danny. I didn't know. Colt turned back around. That's not the end of it. She might have blinded that soldier, but the others tried to kill us. I was shot. Danny ran through a fire, and we both jumped out of a third-story window. He paused as he chose his next words. Those men are still out there. Jarvis was in the apartment. He knows who we are, and he wants us dead. We can't risk a mission across the street. If you all want to stop the army, if you want to kick Jarvis out of this town, we need to be smart, not heroic. Melody slid back on the couch in silence, her gaze bopping between Danny and Colt. Mrs. Wilkins eased down onto the couch beside her and smiled one of those placating pity smiles Danny's way. Danny fought the urge to throw something. Pity never sat well with her. It was one of the main reasons social workers never picked up on her mother's drug addiction and Danny's perilous home life. She didn't need pity. She needed a break. That's what she thought she'd found here with these people. Mr. and Mrs. Wilkins, Melody and Doug. They were supposed to understand and give her a chance to hope for the future. Instead, it was more of the same. She stared at the back of Colt's head. He got it. More than even Danny herself. It had been Danny's own failings that hastened Gran's death and led to her mother's betrayal. If she'd been harder from the start, more callous, more calculating, maybe then she would have escaped the army's wrath entirely. She wouldn't be beat up and scarred, and Colt wouldn't be sitting there with a bullet hole in his arm. Because of her inability to give up on the past, she almost killed them both. It wouldn't happen again. Danny moved just enough to catch sight of Will, still hiding behind the hallway wall. He heard the entire thing. She hoped it kicked some sense into him. It seems we've all been living in a bit of denial around here. Mrs. Wilkins voiced the very thoughts echoing around inside Danny's head. We can't help but come at this from another perspective. Although the army has been harsh regarding pets and dissidents, they haven't hurt any of us. Not physically. Doug slid forward on the couch. You know, they could at any time. I understand that. Which is why I'm proposing a scouting mission. No way. Doug shook his head. Not until they clear out. She held up her wrinkled hand. What if we only watch the house? Colt spoke up. Surveillance only? No! Danny searched forward, but Colt held up a hand. For what purpose? To keep tabs on them, for one, and to monitor for signs of Angela and John. There might come a time when the army lets down its guard. We might be able to rescue them without much risk. Harvey chimed in to support his wife.
Gloria has a point. Now that we know they are camped out across from Melody and Doug, we need to be extra vigilant. A constant watch is a prudent move.
I agree. Colt glanced back at Danny.
We need to be prepared in case they come here next. We don't know what they're after.
I might. Melody spoke up for the first time since Danny shut her up. John worked for the university as an engineer. He helped run the central power station.
The grid's fried. Why would they need his help now?
I don't know, but based on all the gas they've siphoned and the generators you said were running on campus, maybe they're getting worried about their fuel supply.
Harvey nodded. The central power station is a natural gas facility. It burns natural gas and harnesses the steam for electricity. One of the students who worked in my bookshop told me about it. She said they were trying to convert more and more of the university's systems to run off the steam power.
And John knows something about this. Melody nodded. Angela said he's always over there troubleshooting the system. Colt leaned back on the couch.
If John can get the power station running, there will be no stopping Jarvis. He'll have all the power he needs. People will flock to the university. They won't hesitate to trade their freedom for a hot shower and a cup of coffee.
Do you think that's what he's after? A modern-day feudal system with a bunch of serfs and him the lord? Overlord is more like it. Danny shuddered. The thought of Jarvis turning the entire town into his empire sent a chill down her spine. If he succeeded, there would be no stopping him. He could expand beyond Eugene into the neighboring rural areas, eventually take over the bigger cities, become the de facto ruler of the Pacific Northwest. She exhaled. We can't let that happen. If the neighbors are the key to Jarvis's power, we have to stop them. Mrs. Wilkins focused on Danny, her eyebrow raised in doubt. What happened to not taking a chance? That was before. I know what that man is like. He'll stop at nothing to stay in power. If Jarvis gets his hands on a working power station, we'll never make it out of Eugene alive.
Then you do want to save the Cliftons, Danny snorted.
No, I want to ensure that power station never goes online. Colt nodded in agreement.
Danny's right. This isn't about saving your neighbors. It's about stopping a madman.
He stood up in a rush.
We can try to save the Cliftons, but you all have to understand something. The easiest way to eliminate the threat is to kill anyone with knowledge.
Melody's eyes went wide. You mean, kill John and Angela?
If it comes down to it, yes. And you need to be prepared for just that possibility.
Chapter 15. Colt. Bellmead Way, Eugene, Oregon. 12 p.m. The sun cast no shadow while Colt and Doug crouched behind a house two away from the Cliftons' place. With low clouds and thick, humid air, the neighborhood hung like Colt's breath, waiting for a rainstorm or a volley of bullets. He focused his binoculars on the Cliftons' front porch and scanned for some sign of life. Nothing.
Tell me more about John and Angela. He works for the university, but what else do you know about them?
Doug rubbed a hand over his black hair. Not much to tell, really. They seem like every other neighbor on this street.
Any kids?
No. Angela worked part-time as an interior designer, I think. She was always fussing with the house.
Harvey chimed in. The place was a real fixer-upper when they bought it. Old Mrs. Oster lived there 50 years, the last 20 as a widow. She didn't keep up with the times.
Colt nodded.
So Angela spent most of her time at home. Is the house as clean on the inside as it is on the outside?
She's a neat freak, that's for sure. The one time John invited a bunch of guys from the neighborhood over, he made a point of using coasters. Said Angela would lose it if we damaged her antique coffee table.
A clean, organized house meant fewer items to hide behind or use as makeshift weapons. Colt frowned. There weren't even any gangly bushes around the house for cover.